I just think when you're paying your quarterback $40 million, you need to get good value in the draft, because that's how you're going to be able to survive and still have a strong, well-rounded roster, despite not having as much cap as so many other teams do. You know?
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Folge 133 vom Kaputt Podcast. Mein Name ist Luca und bei mir ist Simon.
Hallo.
Ja, wir schließen heute unseren Draft Recap ab mit dieser Folge. Ich glaube nicht, dass wir mit Andre begonnen haben, aber heute nochmal zu Gast Andre Simoni von DNVR, dementsprechend die Folge auch auf Englisch, also sind ja ein paar neue Hörer dazugekommen in den letzten Wochen. Wie gesagt, wenn Englisch nicht euer Ding ist, ab nächste Woche, oder unser Englisch zumindest, ich meine, ich kann es verstehen. nächste Woche machen wir auf Deutsch weiter, aber wie gesagt, es ist so ein bisschen Tradition, da mit Andre dann nochmal durch den Draft durchzugehen und mal seine Takes noch zu hören, also wer ihn nicht kennt, wir haben vor 2 Wochen oder 3 Wochen vor dem Draft auch noch eine Folge mit ihm gemacht. Ist halt jemand, den wir beide sehr schätzen für seine Meinung und auch jemand, der ganzjährig sich mit dem Thema College und Football beschäftigt, halt für sein zuständiges Medienhaus, wenn man es so nennen möchte. Aber ja, wie gesagt, das haben wir heute für euch. Dann haben wir noch, bevor es jetzt gleich losgeht, ungefähr eine Stunde sprechen wir mit ihm dann, haben wir noch so 1-2 kleinere, ja, wie sagt man so schön auf Englisch, Housekeeping Notes, die wir heute kurz anreißen wollen. Wir sind jetzt im Moment dabei, uns den Plan zu machen, wie wir vorgehen. Also wir werden auch dieses Jahr wieder vor der Saison, setzt den Fall, dass jetzt nichts dazwischen kommt, so ein bisschen die Divisions durchgehen, aber das verschiebt sich natürlich irgendwann Mitte Juli oder so, wenn wir damit starten, damit wir dann auch über 2 Monate versetzt bis zum Saisonstart alle 8 Divisions durchkriegen. Und bitte?
Mitte Juni, Juno.
Stimmt, Mitte Juni, richtig. Genau. Ansonsten, ja, wir wollen auch dieses Jahr wieder Fantasy spielen und dachten uns, wer Lust hat, sich damit nochmal oder gegen uns mehr oder weniger zu messen. Letztes Jahr hatten wir 2 Ligen, wo Simon und ich immer gemeinsam gespielt haben. Der kann sich gerne bei uns jetzt schon mal melden. Wir werden dazu noch einen offiziellen Post und so machen. Aber die Liste ist quasi ab jetzt wieder geöffnet. Könnt ihr mir gerne mir privat oder auf unserem Podcast-Account oder per Mail, findet ihr alles bei Twitter, könnt ihr uns schreiben. Ansonsten Mail cover-2@web.de. Und dann gucken wir mal, wie viele Leute wir dieses Mal zusammenkriegen. Habe ich irgendwas vergessen?
Nein. Haben alles. Fantasy-Football-Plan kommt. Erörtern wir noch, wie es in den nächsten Wochen weitergeht. Andre haben wir jetzt gleich am Start.
Ja, stimmt. Wir haben noch ein bisschen über Wetten gesprochen, da in Colorado diese Woche Wetten legalisiert wurde und bei uns ja auch mit der Wette der Woche und so immer so ein bisschen das Thema ist. Haben wir die Chance genutzt von ihm, einen oder anderen Tipp schon mal für ein paar Futures zu bekommen. Also ja, kleiner Teil am Ende der Folge noch.
Genau. Ja.
Aber ja, dann würde ich sagen, wünsche euch viel Spaß dabei und wir hören uns nächste Woche. Haut rein.
Peace.
So, guess who's back? Today we are joined again by Mr. Andre Simoni, newly betting and draft expert of DNVR.
Yeah.
Really need to talk a bit about that at the end, because the whole impact of the betting thing, and now I think you guys in Colorado are able to bet as well legally.
Yep.
By now, everybody likely knows you, and you are as an almost frequent guest here on this podcast.
Yeah, at least around this time of year, yeah.
Yeah. No, but how are you doing? No, the draft is over, and the lazy time has started in the NFL. What's your daily schedule looking like?
No, I mean, you would have thought. That's what I thought, too. That's what I told my poor wife, that, once the draft was over, things would calm down a little. Not the case, because the NFL is still controlling kind of the
the news this last week with the schedule release. So we were doing a lot with that. I'm still writing some more film rooms and at-large NFL pieces on the draft. And yeah, now we're doing this daily betting show, and you know, sports are starting back a few different places around the world. So we at least have some live sports to talk about, and then different NFL bets and stuff. So keeping busy, keeping busy. It's been nice. These shows are a little later in the day. I'm a night owl, so that's changed a little. You know, I can sleep in a little more. I can crunch statistics and do my other work during the day, and then by night I'm ready with some fresh numbers and odds to try and give our listeners a betting edge.
Yeah, but you're still working from home, I guess.
Yeah, we are still working from home. You know, the thing is, right before this all happened, we were moving our offices from the small offices we had to going in our bar. And our offices and studios will all be right there above. And there's like a clear glass where you can see everything. So, and obviously bars and restaurants are the last thing to open. You know, so yeah, that's all a kind of an added little thing. I think we can go and still work in there, but obviously it won't be open as a bar for a while. So yeah, that's another factor in play here. So no, for now, still working from home. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, today we want to focus on the draft. We are finishing the draft with this podcast for this year. And we also like to get to know a bit about the players to watch for next college season. But just like last year, maybe you can give us a little outlook on that.
Of course.
I have to say, maybe it's just a feeling, but college football, like I told you last year, and the draft had a much bigger attention this year here in Germany.
Interesting.
You really feel the football growing over here.
So awesome.
And what I was interested in, like Julian, our guest last episode, you also were live streaming with your colleagues Ryan and Zach and Andrew Mason.
Yeah.
For the whole time during the draft. How was that for you? Was it different from when you watched the draft in previous years?
It was actually really nice. When I started this, I really started as doing podcasts in Italian on the NFL, college football, and draft. And that's one thing we would always do every year for round one was a live stream. Now, at the time, we were only streaming audio, so that was different. Being on camera the whole time makes it a little bit, you know, it's not as loose as it used to be in the podcast days. But I honestly really miss that. I really missed being on air during the draft. I'd always wanted to be on air during the second day as well. And that's what we were able to do. And then we went on air after the third day of the draft to kind of recap everything. So that was lots of fun. The last few years since doing it at BSN, it kind of became hectic because I would watch the draft with one of my colleagues who I would do a recap podcast with. But during the draft, as soon as the Broncos pick came in, I was going to watch film and I was writing my film rooms, you know, so I was just pumping them out real quick so that we had them almost instantly when the picks were made. Now I had the excuse of being on air, taking more time on the film rooms. Obviously, the NFL schedule is a little different now because we don't have rookie minicamps coming right up, so I can milk it a little more and take longer. So it was actually really nice, a little more relaxed in some ways. And, you know, I just love being on air and being able to talk and give instant reactions on these draft picks.
Yeah, I could say it was really enjoyable watching you guys doing this.
I appreciate it.
So who are your top three winners and top three losers of this year's draft?
Yeah, the team that stood out most to me was the Dallas Cowboys. They really, based on my grades, they had the best value pick of the entire first round with a plus 10 in value. They got my seventh best prospect at the 17th pick. So that's really extremely good value for them to start with. And then they were able to come away with a bunch of other players in need areas that I really think will be valuable. Trevon Diggs, the cornerback from Alabama, his tape sometimes left you wanting for more, but he's a perfect outside cornerback. He's a former wide receiver, so he's still quite raw. And, you know, I thought even though he was tested against some of the best wide receivers in the country last year, he held his own quite nicely. And then to get Tyler Biadasz where they got him, the center from Wisconsin, you know, I get that a lot of draft analysts were a little lower on him as we got further fuming. Down the process. And doesn't that happen every year, though? I mean, we, you know, it's a bit of prospect fatigue, and it's a bit of, well, what he does well is stuff we can teach others, which, hey.
I like him so much.
Right. He's a plug-and-play player. And to get him late fourth round was amazing. Neville Gallimore wasn't one of my favorite interior defensive linemen, but to get him in the mid-third where they got him, the upside as an interior pass rusher with the Oklahoma nose tackle is out of this world. And even Bradley Anae, who isn't one of those four second-round grades or better, for me, the pass rusher out of Utah, to get him in the fifth round, late fifth, you know, I think he can do some things as a situational pass rusher. He tore things apart at the Senior Bowl. So we know he can have success against NFL talents, but he's kind of a Biadasz as well, where it's like, well, those traits, you know, they're not elite traits. But hey, if you get the job done, that's more important than having elite traits. So just top to bottom, considering where they were picking in each round, I just think they came away with a really, really nice class.
Yeah, and the other two team winners?
Of course, yeah. I thought the Bengals, and of course the Bengals, you know, in some ways start at a disadvantage because of where they're drafting as the first team to pick in each round. But what they were able to do, I really thought was amazing. You know, they addressed some major needs at linebacker, added a very nice value piece on the offensive line with Akeem Adonijay, added a serviceable defensive end in Khalid Kareem, and some great linebackers in Marcus Bailey, Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis Gaithers. Frankly, some of my favorites at the linebacker position. They came away with all three. And then, you know, how can you criticize them for going Joe Burrow first overall, and then T. Higgins at 33, I thought was an amazing value pick. So, you know, the teams that draft higher, they have more of a more pressure to get that value in each pick. But they amazingly were able to do that with six players graded out in my top 100. That's six prospects who I think could be future NFL starters. So that's really a monumental haul for them, and three of those guys in my top 50. So I really thought they did an extraordinary job. And then there were a few other teams kind of tied with an A grade. I must say this was the first year in many where I had fewer B's and C's and more D's and A's. So the middle class wasn't there, but the high end and low end was more prevalent. I thought my Broncos did well, but I also thought the Minnesota Vikings did very well with six top 100 prospects, three who had a higher than a second round grade or better. I really like Jeff Gladney, who they were able to come away with. And of course, they got Justin Jefferson, who was another great value pick for me in the first round. And Ezra Cleveland, great plug and play starter at a premium position with the ideal traits to go in that Kubiak offense. I thought they were a bit wasteful with their day three picks, but what they did in the first 2 days of the draft trumps everything else. So they were another team that came away with a monumental haul and six top 100 prospects.
Okay, I remember, Simon, who were your favorites again? The Browns?
Yeah. I had two A-plus ratings for my recap of the draft. Cowboys, of course. You already mentioned all the big upsides and especially, number of steals they got. Yeah. But my second A-plus were actually the Browns. And what do you think about this year's Browns draft? They had a pretty good draft last year, but I think this year tops everything. What's your input on that?
Yeah, I like the value they got with the first two picks and with the last two picks. What I question is the fit that they were able to get with Jedrick Wills. If they're trying to run more of a zone style offense, I'm not sure he's a perfect fit there because his lateral mobility was really my main question with him. And that's all that zone blocking is moving you know, laterally, not so much downhill where he's really a phenom. And Grant Delpit is a nice risk to take. I don't know that if the of all the teams to take kind of a gamble on a high upside guy who needs to be motivated to try a little harder if the Browns are the best place to go. I know they're trying to build, you know, the way the Raiders are trying to build Clemson West, the Browns are trying to build LSU North. We'll see how that works out. And, you know, Jordan Elliott, Jacob Phillips, Harrison Bryant, I see plenty of talent in all three. In the third, I don't know that they got top 100 value with Elliott and Phillips. So for me, it was a B minus considering where they picked. But I love Nick Harris. Talk about a great fit in that system. The center from Washington they got with a fifth rounder. And Donovan Peoples-Jones, if we go off value on my big board, him drafted in the early sixth round might be the best value pick of the entire draft. But the way I grade it, the first three rounds, I should say, are what matter most. And in the first three rounds, I liked what they did, but I didn't love it. So it's right around the B minus for me.
Okay.
Okay, and then who are some of those teams in some the losers. B category? Yeah, exactly.
Well, should we start from the one F I have, which is the... The Seattle Seahawks, who amazingly came away with one prospect in my top 100. You know, look, people listening are going to say, you know, why do we dwell so much on the top 100? It's just my rankings and what have you. But really, at the end of the day, there was one prospect in the entire first round who didn't grade out as a future starter for me, and that was Jordan Brooks, who went to the Seahawks. So, I mean, there's something there. And the Seahawks do this. This is kind of their classic mode of operating. They go against the grain and do their own thing. But I really think they could have gotten much, much better value in this draft with where they were picking. Daryl Taylor's another guy who... look, I get in the early in mid second, he's a speed rusher, he fits their system, but not a good value pick there as well. I hated their pick of Damian Lewis in the early third. I thought there was a bunch of guards who can do what he does, who could have been found later on. And really, the only guy who graded out in my top 100 was a fifth round pick edge rusher, Alton Robinson from Syracuse, who has some nice upside. So they went high upside a little later, and in the beginning, they went with limited prospects who they might see as fitting their system because they have the skills they covet. But they're also, at the end of the day, they're limited prospects. When you're going to be forced to do things you're not comfortable with, these are the kind of players that are really going to hurt you. If you were able to get guys who were more well-rounded or had better raw skills, you would be able to have more success. So I think it's a bit of a, I understand their strategies work to some extent. Obviously, they also got lucky with, you know, it wasn't so much the way they drafted. It was more what they did picking up no-name free agents. But in the end, one of the best picks they've made since Pete Carroll and John Schneider have been there was Earl Thomas, 15th overall. That wasn't a reach. That wasn't a system pick. That was just going and getting the best player available and building their defense around him. And then they got lucky with Russell Wilson in a lot of ways, you know. But the rest of their drafts have really been lacking, and that's a problem.
That's what I was thinking too, recapping the Seahawks draft. They're obviously doing what they think is the best for their team, the best fits. And I think they are valuing the value aspect not enough. In this case, I think it's not about what you need for your team, but also which value you could get besides getting your perfect fit. How does or how do you weigh in value in your draft grades?
Yeah, I mean, one guy who projected as a top 100 player, I just see a lot of, and you know, that's future starters. And that's the problem here. It's a lot of guys who are limited to being maybe part-time or fringe starters, but not full-time three-down starters who you trust to be valuable both in supporting the run game or defending the run and supporting the passing game or defending the pass. And, you know, it's kind of they think they're smarter than everyone else. They keep going after high-end high school recruits who didn't live up to it in college, thinking they'll be the ones who are able to unlock that. I'm not sure that's ever worked out for them. They always try this strategy. It hasn't really worked out. Christian Michael, the running back from Texas A&M, is probably the best example of the Seahawks trying to do that. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll get some serviceable players out of this, but I just think when you're paying your quarterback $40 million, you need to get good value in the draft because that's how you're going to be able to survive and still have a strong, well-rounded roster, despite not having as much cap as so many other teams do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. What do you think about the Packers draft?
It's another team that thinks they're smarter than everyone else and went to fix up specific needs rather than really getting value out of where they're at. Jordan Love, amazingly, is the pick that I like best of what they made. He's the only guy in my top 50 that they drafted, the only guy in my top 100, which is kind of insane. AJ Dillon, look, I get it, but late second round is insane for this guy. Insane. I get he's a downhill runner. He'll fit their scheme, and he's big enough and was used in two back sets at Boston College as a blocker to where you think, wow, he's fullback sized. I think he could be a fullback, but he could also be a full-time running back. That's intriguing. I hope their experiment works. But, you know, when you're going out on a limb and trying to do an experiment like that, I think you can find guys like that later on in the draft, or even they're like hanging around as street free agents. You can find players who kind of fit that mold. Josiah DeGura is this to even more so. I think Matt LaFleur thinks he's kind of found his Kyle Juszczyk. But look, maybe but there's some intrigue to this tight end out of Cincinnati. But again, you're not getting good value in the third round. And I think there were plenty of other options at the tight end position that you could have done better in. I don't mind the offensive linemen they got in John Runyon and Jake Hansen. I think they fit their system, but it's just not enough value for a team that had a lot of needs. They won 13 games last year, and yet Las Vegas has their over under win total at 8.5. So it's a team that a lot, you know, the public doesn't think the 13 wins is as good as they were last year. And I think they're going to show it. And with a draft like this, they really didn't improve their chances much at all.
Yeah, we kind of slewed them for picking a quarterback in the first round with Aaron Rodgers at hand and with the possibility to maybe make another run. You already said they were pretty good last year, and we also had a big discussion last week. We thought that was the wrong pick, simply said.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some players you think are overdrafted? I know we talked about some of the winners and losers,
mm-hmm.
but who are some where you say this guy, it's like AJ Dillon, where you say it's impossible to pick him there?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's funny how this has happened. This is a trend I see every year now, but the end of the first round and kind of the middle of the third round on to the end of the third round, I think I always see some of the worst value picks in the draft. And that allows teams early in the second round and early in the fourth round to get some of the best value picks in the draft. So there's just something about those teams at the bottom of those two rounds kind of press and reach on guys. And I've heard GM say as much. John Elway with the pick of Adam Gotsis in the late second round 4 years ago now, I remember him saying like, yeah, we had him graded out as a third rounder, but we didn't think he'd be around by a third round pick, so we just jumped the gun and took him. Well, it goes back to our value discussion where you're in the end, those picks can come back to bite you. And I really thought, you know, the worst value picks were the cornerback picks that we saw after the top two guys went. AJ Terrell, Damon Arnett, especially, were just not good selections for me in the first round at all. We went over Jordan Brooks. I don't think Isaiah Wilson is a great pick either. I get the Titans. Yeah. Look, they needed a right tackle specifically because you have Taylor Lewan, and he fits their identity of a downhill run blocker, physical. But gosh, that's not good value. I mean, you could have got Matthew Peart in the third round, and he's basically giving you the same exact kind of player, same exact kind of value that you would have gotten. So I don't understand that. Another pick that I thought was not good value was Darrington Evans, the running back out of App State for the Titans in the late third. Don't quite get that pick. I think you could have found running backs of that caliber later on in the draft. Odd what the New England Patriots did in the third round with those two tight ends. I think those were both the highest players to be drafted that I did not put a draftable grade on. And that's because Devin Asiasi, the tight end out of UCLA, I get that he's intriguing as an inline blocking tight end. This is a guy that doesn't have the prototypical size to really be that Gronk type tight end that they seek. And Dalton Keene's a local product here. Surprised everyone by declaring early, coming out of Virginia Tech, and then had a really nice combine. So I get him being drafted in the third. They're going to have to be really clever about how they use him, though, because I don't know. And is this another glorified fullback, maybe, like Josiah DeGura? I saw a lot of that. The tight ends were drafted all over the place, and it's a lot of, you know, scheme-specific kind of fits, but a lot of those tight ends seem to be a bit overdrafted to me in what was clearly a weak tight end class coming in.
Okay, and who are some players you had a much higher grade on in comparison to where they were drafted?
Crazy how the top wide receivers dropped, you know. I guess it's a deep class, so I can understand how teams felt they needed to prioritize other areas because they would still get very good wide receivers, you know, throughout the draft, frankly. But it's surprising to see guys like Jerry Jeudy and Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb drop a bit, and then guys like Jalen Reagor and Brandon Ayuk get overdrafted. That was another trend. Speed at wide receiver was overdrafted at every turn here. But I thought those three receivers were great picks. I thought some of the offensive tackles after the top four guys went were great value picks. Of course, Ezra Cleveland, who I mentioned, to the Vikings. I think Josh Jones going to the Cardinals was a really nice pick on day two as well. And I thought there was some nice value to be had at wide receiver throughout the draft. We talked about the Browns being able to snag Donovan Peoples-Jones later in the draft. Mm-hmm. I thought Denzel Mims going to the Jets kind of in the late second round was a really nice value pick. I love the Bryan Edwards pick to the Raiders. Just a lot of value to be had in that deep wide receiver class. So those were kind of the two trends I noticed, was the tackles and wide receivers, especially in those second tiers, seemed to drop a bit. And teams were smart to snatch them up where they did.
Nice. As always, great insights. So let's look a bit into the future on this year's college season.
Let's.
Like I said, like last year, the rising possibilities to consume football over here and even college football seem to have an effect.
Yeah.
I believe now it's your duty again to inform our listeners on what they can expect for next year's college football season.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, this year it was obviously incredible O-line and wide receiver class. Mm-hmm. Next year, some say the wide receiver class may be even better.
Yep.
In your opinion, what is the strongest and the weakest position group for next year's draft?
Yeah, really, really, really nice wide receiver class this year. Maybe not as deep as we just had in 2020, but 2021 might be might have a few more elite talents at the top, which is just insane to think. There's also some really good returning running backs. So it seems like the offensive skill positions will again be highlighted because you have two phenomenal quarterbacks at the top as well. We talked about running backs and wide receivers. This will be a bounce back year for tight end, where there are at least three guys that I think could potentially go in the first round. So I really think those offensive skill positions are where you're going to see some of the best talent in next year's 2021 class. And it's a rawer group. We're projecting a bit more as we do this far out. But I think this edge rusher class, one of the weaker classes in this past draft, promises to bounce back and have a few more exciting talents here too.
Who are some standouts of those groups? Is there somebody like Chase Young who you two weeks ago you heavily praised on this podcast?
Yeah, if there's a Chase Young this year, it would be Oregon left tackle Penei Sewell. He's a guy who started at left tackle for the Ducks since his freshman year. But, you know, I haven't put him analyzed him thoroughly like I have the guys who've already been drafted and get a final draft grade for me on my board. But he really promises to be the best offensive tackle I have ever evaluated. He's a guy who until late last season had never been called for a penalty in his entire career playing left tackle. I mean, he was a kind of the anchor of a Ducks offensive line that I thought was the best in the country last season. He is he's the offensive version of Chase Young, really. He's so big. I think he's almost 350 pounds, but when you look at him, you wouldn't be able to tell him. He moves incredibly well, incredibly powerful, very compact, no wasted movement. He's just a joy to watch. You guys will love watching the left tackle at Oregon. I just promise it next year. And then maybe an even higher ranked prospect coming into the year is Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence, another guy who's been starting since he was a true freshman, forced Clemson head coach Dabo Sweeney to bench Kelly Bryant, who took Clemson to the national championship the year prior. And Lawrence has just been a force for Clemson the last 2 years, leading them to national championships in back-to-back seasons and stomping Alabama as a true freshman. He is almost at the level of an Andrew Luck or John Elway, that rare quarterback prospect that almost seems like a sure thing. So he's very, very exciting.
Yeah, we need to talk QBs later, but about those weaker position groups, where should teams look to better themselves in free agency or maybe even wait a year? Who are some position groups you think won't work next year?
Yeah, obviously we're a year out, so still a lot to figure out. But I'm not seeing, outside of the top two cornerbacks for me, I'm not seeing a ton of depth at the position. And I'm not seeing a ton of depth on the interior defensive line this year either. So, you know, that's two areas on defense, two areas which are very important in the modern NFL, being able to create interior pressure and being able to cover with five defensive backs. That's an area where, I think teams would be smart to address, fill those holes, maybe even with some of the free agents that are still on the market now. And who knows, maybe snatch up one of the top guys in the supplemental draft if that becomes a big thing this offseason, given the uncertainty that surrounds kind of the whole sporting world.
Yeah, that's a big question. I don't know how will this work, because many of those have to finish their degree, or maybe they say, okay, we will enter the supplemental draft. Do you think it's a real option for those top prospects?
It's a real option for the top prospects who decided to pass on declaring for the 2020 draft but would have been eligible. So, you know, guys like Trevor Lawrence, Penei Sewell, they still won't be eligible. when the 2021 draft would start anyways. But guys like Devontae Smith, who actually had outperformed both Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs in a lot of ways as Alabama's star wide receiver, he could potentially be eligible. Sean Wade, the cornerback from Ohio State, who many like myself would say was the better cornerback than Damon Arnett, who went to the Raiders in the top 20, would also potentially be eligible, as would star linebacker Dylan Moses of Alabama or star defensive tackle from Florida State, Marvin Wilson. There are some really good offensive tackle prospects, some intriguing wide receiver prospects and running back prospects later on. And yeah, if there's a feeling that the college football season isn't going to be played, I really think a lot of these guys I just mentioned, especially the top 10 to 15, could put their names in the supplemental draft and want to play in the NFL next season and kind of guarantee themselves a contract early while they still can. And that would really change things up for this offseason and the next draft as well.
Imagine the hype around the supplemental draft this year. If this happens, it's when we talk about this, like it's far ahead. But in those moments, the situation with the old COVID-19 gets real. I always in the daily life, you sometimes forget that it's happening. You do your stuff from home, and
right.
And when you talk about those things and how it's impacting the NFL, it's always a point of realization.
Right.
You already mentioned the quarterbacks, Lawrence and Fields.
Yeah.
I guess you have Lawrence higher than Fields right now.
Yeah, just barely.
Barely, okay. Who are some other guys who do you think have NFL potential, and maybe some dark horse quarterback prospect who can get there by taking the next step?
Yeah, I really think this Trey Lance, redshirt freshman, so hasn't played that long in college, but he plays for North Dakota State, famously Carson Wentz's alma mater. They are the dominant program of the next division down from Division I football. He's getting a lot of hype. He's more of an athlete running quarterback, but there's a lot of intrigue with what he can do. I keep coming back to Sam Ehlinger of Texas, who, for all I know, I might have talked about him last year when we were previewing the 2020 draft class.
Yeah, I watched some of him, and I really liked him as well.
Yeah, yeah, and he's played some big games. You know, Texas is the only team that really had a chance to beat LSU in the fourth quarter. You think of how many guys the Tigers got drafted this year on defense. And so Ehlinger's promising, very promising, and he's what the NFL covets nowadays. He's a physical, athletic guy who has some arm talent, though that's not his best skill. If he can develop that, I think he'd be a fascinating prospect. A guy that some people are hyping up is Jamie Newman, the transfer from Wake Forest, I believe. He'll be playing for Georgia this year. Another kind of athletic quarterback there to keep an eye on. I still am fairly high on Kellen Mond from Texas A&M. He's coming off a bad year, but that Jimbo Fisher, what he has done at times at the quarterback position has me intrigued, because he's one of the few guys in college who's a bright offensive mind that runs more of a pro style system. So the guys that he develops and produces from his university are a little more NFL ready, let's say. So that makes him intriguing, and I'm trying to think if there's any other quarterbacks that slip my mind right now. But no, those are kind of the big guys that I can think of. Yeah,
I heard some smoke about Alan Bowman from Texas Tech.
Yeah,
he's kind of rising.
Brock Purdy out of Iowa State gets a little love as well. Texas Tech, I think people just look at the school too, but they need to realize that's not Cliff Kingsbury there anymore. So
true.
a little different. I even see some people like Kyle Trask, the Florida quarterback, who I'm in big time wait and see mode, but he kind of fits that Sam Ehlinger mode. There's some options. KJ Costello transfers from Stanford to Mississippi State. He'll be an interesting quarterback as well. Maybe the Jake Eason of this class, if you will.
Mm-hmm. All right. Apart from those quarterbacks, who are some other studs, surefire first round picks, future NFL stars? You'd say people should take an eye on when they're watching college football next year.
Yeah, I mean, you want to watch the wide receivers for the top programs in the country. Jaylen Waddle and Devontae Smith for Alabama. Waddle was kind of the do-it-all weapon for Alabama. He returned punts, and frankly, I think he might have been the fastest receiver for Alabama. And I'm not forgetting that Henry Ruggs was on that team. So he's a phenomenal talent. A lot of people think Ja'Marr Chase of LSU was the best wide receiver in all of college football last year, and the better wide receiver than Justin Jefferson. He's another surefire top five type talent. Justin Ross, the top wide receiver for Clemson, also fits that mold. Just a phenomenal trio right there. If you want to add Devontae Smith, kind of the four guys right there. I don't see him talked about all that much, as much as Sewell or Fields or Lawrence or the top receivers I just mentioned. But for me, Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan, their big defensive end, is at that level and in that conversation. You're talking of, as I kept watching Michigan's defense preparing for the 2020 draft, I was like, wait, why does it look like Michigan has one of the Bosa brothers on their team? And it was Aiden Hutchinson. He's just an unbelievable talent. Then Pat Freemuth of the tight end of Penn State. I actually think he would be eligible for the supplemental draft. Phenomenal tight end. Really quite the weapon in the receiving game. Moves like a guy who's 230 pounds, but he is a he's got prototypical size. And then I mentioned Dylan Moses already, the linebacker out of Alabama. Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn State, might be even better than he is. Just a phenomenal athlete. So those are definitely some guys in my top 15 who you want to keep a close eye on going into the season.
In terms of wide receivers, do you think players like Ross, who are keeping or are still playing with their quarterback, have an advantage on like the Alabama guys who are losing Tua, or even Ja'Marr Chase who loses Joe Burrow?
Yeah, definitely. I think that could certainly play a factor in all this. And I think guys like Chris Olave of Ohio State, who have Justin Fields coming back, could really benefit from that returning quarterback and move their way up. The nice thing about Waddle, though, is he has an impact. Even if his quarterback isn't good, he has such an impact in the return game as a direct ball carrier, even on just short screens, that I think he shouldn't be hurt too much. But Ja'Marr Chase and even Devontae Smith could be hurt if the quarterback play isn't up to par at LSU and Alabama.
In terms of teams, which one should we pay most attention to next year?
That's a great question. That is a really great question.
Only the big schools?
Or, I mean, sadly, that's kind of how college football has been going lately, is the big schools are really dominating. It's almost like adding the playoffs and having that get more importance has really given those top schools more of an advantage in getting those top recruits, because everyone wants to play in the playoffs, you know. So now if you're not one of those top 8 to 10 schools who realistically have a chance to be in the top four and play in the playoffs, it's a little harder to make it in. I think Ohio State and Clemson will be the cream of the crop, kind of like we thought Clemson and Alabama were going to be last year coming into the season. I think Michigan could do very well. Penn State could do very well. Those are the teams that interest me, as the teams behind those top teams who could kind of surprise us. I think the SEC is as wide open as it's been in a little while, with both Burrow and Tua leaving. So that's going to be exciting. I think Penn State, as I mentioned, could be really good in the Big Ten. I think the Pac-12 will be wide open with Oregon potentially having a big season and USC being able to have a big bounce back season. Notre Dame, keep Notre Dame on your televisions regularly. I think they might surprise us this year a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Simon, do you have any other draft-related questions for Andre? Otherwise, I would shift over to the betting segment.
I think that's a good idea to skip that. I wanted to talk like 30 minutes around about the kickers and punters of the next year's draft, but I guess
please no.
I guess it's too much time for that.
That's an interesting point. Which position do you like evaluating the most?
I love edge rusher. I love those guys, man. They're so fun to watch. In fact, I probably love them too much. It's something that I've had to look myself in the mirror as an analyst and realize, you know, at some point I'm overrating some of these edge rushers because I just love the position so much. They're just so fun to watch, you know, get after the quarterback and do everything they do. But yeah, edge rusher is the tippy top position for me. I really enjoy watching offensive tackle, just the other side of the coin, you know, but those are really my top two favorite positions to analyze.
Yeah, I love that when you watch, for example, an edge rusher, and then you see him play against different tackles, and maybe you find some guy on the offensive line, which you then get really intrigued by, and then you start looking at him a bit more. I agree with you there. So, like I said, betting is now legal in Colorado. Yes. I don't know how many states in total there are in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know a few more will be legalizing it soon, too. But yeah, Colorado just seems to be a bit on the forefront on things like that nowadays. So we had it legal as of this month.
Are you an active gambler? And how did you do it in the past? Did you always... Never understood how this works, because there are even gambling podcasts in America.
Oh, yeah.
And they, I always thought they're placing the bets in Vegas in the past. How has it worked so far, and what are the big changes right now for the U.S. gambling market?
Yeah, in the past, I think the sites that allowed it were doing it through offshore betting accounts. And I don't know how the law was circumvented to where I could still gamble online on an American website, but they were doing their transactions through offshore stuff, you know, and that made it so that these gambling sites could kind of do weird stuff and not respect the laws and what have you necessarily. You know, it was a bit you know, the wild, wild west a little bit. And now with legal gambling, for one, when you gamble, you know that part of it's going to taxes, which is always nice. And then you know that, you know, especially in a season like this, how great it is to have it legal. If I place a bet on a win total for the Broncos, or I place a bet on a game for week one of the NFL season, and then for whatever reason that's canceled, I know that DraftKings or whatever other legal betting sports book has to refund me. So that's really the things where it changes, and it opens up some great advertising opportunities for us, especially with the sports of the teams that we really cover not going on right now, being able to take more of a gambling aspect and have fun and still talk sports and try to entertain people has been very enjoyable. So that's really where it changes, but I don't know too much the legalities. As far as me, yeah, I'm an active bettor. I try not to get too crazy. You know, it's not like I'm swimming in money over here. I do have a young child, and you know, my wife and I, we're still a young family. So I try to not get too crazy and be responsible. But, you know, there are some nice deals, especially with gambling just starting and all these different apps competing for our, you know, us to use their sports book specifically. So that's that's fun to take advantage of these deals. And I really got into gambling. I mean, you know, I've always had fun with friends and bet here and there on sports, you know, just under the table between friends. But where I really got into kind of more of the analytical side was when we launched BSN Against the Spread several years ago. And there were these two different models that our boss had used before and kind of taught me, and they were good ways of predicting winners against the spread, and especially good ways of understanding how Las Vegas comes to handicapping football games. And, you know, I started working on more projects with a friend of mine in Italy who started giving me a creating some metrics for college football. And I did that for 2 years. I did a weekly podcast on football betting, college and NFL, and was writing three weekly columns on best picks of the week on that. And no, that was lots of fun. You know, it was all centered around another gambling sponsor who we actually, our promo codes were doing so well for them, we were losing money in the deal we had. So, you know, we kind of cut our losses and stopped doing that. But now with gambling being legal, the stars aligned for us to come back and do this show and do it a little differently. And it's just been, it's been a blast.
Yeah, yeah. What's this? What is your concrete approach with DMVR on this whole gambling thing?
My metrics, you mean?
Yeah, and the podcast with Ryan, you're doing it weekly right
now. Yeah, we're doing a daily podcast. It's called DNVR Bets Daily, Monday through Friday at least. So, you know, it's a shorter 20, 30-minute podcast. We talk about different bets coming up. You know, with the new NFL schedule, we went through those lines. We've talked about some of the prop bets that are more centered around the Denver Broncos. We had a number three ranked heavyweight contender in the world, Curtis Blaydes, on our show to preview the UFC on Friday. We've been talking a lot of Korean baseball. I gave some Faroe Island soccer picks that have done terrible for the weekend. You know, we're just having fun with it. It's all thanks to our sponsor, the DraftKings Sportsbook. And they're also allowing us to put specific bets on their app that are like Colorado specials. So that's going to be lots of fun. We're going to talk about that next week. I just have, you know, I love data and analytics. So there's a lot of different ways I can break this stuff down specifically for NFL and baseball win totals over a season. There's this old Bill James, who's kind of the godfather of advanced analytics, like 30, 40 years ago, you know, all that money ball type stuff that starts from him. There's this formula to predict win totals for a team based on their point totals rather than their record last year. And there's ways to use that and then apply it to the win totals that Las Vegas is already giving you, which kind of tells us what the improvements a team made in the offseason are. So that's a great method. You can also apply that formula to establish game lines on a week-to-week basis. I don't know how much you guys know about NFL betting, but you know, any game, a team will be favored by 7 points or 3.5 points, stuff like that.
Yeah, we do a bet of the week every week during the regular season.
So you know how that works.
It's kind of like in Germany, it's called handicapping.
Yeah,
when you talk about soccer, I mean you know that stuff from watching the Italy Italian league. Will you be talking Bundesliga?
Of course,
next week.
We can't wait for the Bundesliga to start back up. So
maybe that's a good information for our listeners to maybe tune in into the DMVR. Betting podcast.
Maybe you guys can give me some advice on the Bundesliga.
Yeah, sure. We talk after the recording. But now we need some advice from you, because like last year, please give us your favorites for defense and offense rookie of the year. And maybe you have some hot tips. You already talked about the futures with the schedule being announced this week. Mm-hmm. What are some hot picks you would suggest to place some money on right now?
Yeah, I really like a team like the Packers taking the under 8.5. So already Las Vegas is telling you they're going to regress in a major way. I like their under. I like taking the Minnesota Vikings as the winners of the NFC North. I like the Buffalo Bills under 9 wins. That's another regression candidate here. Okay. So you can keep those handy. The Houston Texans, another team I could see going under. Their line's already at 7.5, though. So I don't know if you should go too much lower than that, but monitor how that changes. I think the Seahawks are another team that could go under, and I think the Rams might be able to go over. And it's possible the Buccaneers aren't getting enough love despite Tom Brady being there.
What's the line for the Rams?
The Rams.
Is it 9.5? 8.5?
That's right in that range. 8. So that's pretty 8. Nice.
Okay. I like that too.
Yeah.
I think especially the NFC West is kind of interesting. One thing I heard this week or yesterday when the schedules were released or after the schedules were released, one game I think it's quite funny. Arizona against San Francisco.
Yeah.
First week, I remember the games of the last season. They were they kept me sweaty.
That's right.
I think it's the 49ers are some kind of 10.5 point favorites or
massive
something like that.
Favorite. Yep.
And it's funny to see them this early. Now we are four months in advance right now. Maybe we keep track of that and keep looking on the quotes. For example, just for the first week now and in 4 months, right before the game start.
Yeah,
that might get really interesting how far this differs from what's now.
100%. That's what's really interesting, is to see how this changes. And that's an interesting game because the metric I use that applies a yard per play averages, that actually thought the Niners weren't favored by enough. But the line I use with the estimated wins that applies the win totals of Las Vegas, that thought that the Cardinals was a smart bet. So that kind of helps you get some insights in how somewhere like Vegas can come to a line like that. Because on a play-by-play basis, the Niners were a much better team. But then you go off of how these two teams played each other, you go off of what Vegas thinks the win totals will be and how they'll be a little closer than they were last year. I think you're right. That's one of the few you might want to jump on now, because that's probably, if it's 10.5 or even 8.5 now, I think that'll be closer to 6.5 by the time we get to the start of the season.
You didn't mention the rookies.
Let's get to the rookies. Interesting year for offensive rookie, because Tua might not play, Justin Herbert might not play or might not play enough, and Joe Burrow's on a really bad team, and I don't know if they're going to use him the right way. I'm not sure he's an immediate success kind of candidate. So usually we look at the quarterbacks, and those are the smart bets. I'm not sure I see a smart, safe bet at quarterback this year, because the top guys aren't going to get a ton of playing time. Jalen Hurts isn't going to get a ton of playing time. You know, like 4 weeks in last year, Gardner Minshew looked like a great pick. You probably could have got that at like plus 5,000 to start the season, right? But then that didn't come to fruition. I'm not sure I see a Minshew type in this year's class who was drafted early enough. So we move to running back, where Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you're not going to get great odds, but in that offense should really be an instant producer, I think. J.K. Dobbins is intriguing in Baltimore, but I don't know. Is he going to get enough? You know, it all depends on, because Justice Hill's going to be healthy too. The Oklahoma State speed running back that they drafted a year ago, who I think is going to be a huge part of their offense. So I really like the odds you can get for DeAndre Swift. And if I have to give you a dark horse, I would give you Cam Akers of the Los Angeles Rams. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I would sway away from the receivers because all those top guys really have many weapons around them.
Yes.
Maybe that's a short advice from us over here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but we played a little game, maybe to finish this off, draft related. Last year, stumped the Andre in relation to stumped the truck.
Yeah.
Are you down to play maybe three rounds again? We will name the position and the college, and you see if you can find the player.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. It's a guard from Indiana who went to the Green Bay Packers in the sixth round at pick 209.
Oh man, you stumped the truck here. You stumped the truck for sure. Who is it? Who is it? Give it to me.
It's Simon Stepaniak.
Ah, oh, man. Those damn Packers.
Yeah. Then let's just go one pick ahead at 210. The Philadelphia Eagles picked an offensive tackle from Auburn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. The right tackle transferred from Massachusetts, played opposite Prince Tegawanagu.
No, it's him.
it is Prince Tegawanagu. Right, yeah. Right. I forgot. He was drafted later than Jack Driscoll. That's right. Crazy.
Yeah, he was dropping like crazy. I was
insane. Clearly injuries, right?
And then let's get to pick number... Let's get really late. Pick 222. It's a wide receiver from Ohio State.
Oh, KJ Hill. Easy.
Yeah, no. Okay, that was too easy for
you.
Yeah. I guess I push one further with... Let's do the Packers again. 236. A safety from TCU.
Oh, shoot. I know. Last name Vaughn. No.
No.
And no. If I saw the name on paper, I'd know, but I'm drawing a blank right now. You got it.
First name is Vernon.
Scott.
Right. Yeah. Perfect.
Good, good,
good. Oh, man. Thank you so much for doing this again.
Yeah, as always. This was a blast. I appreciate it.
We appreciate your time and expertise about prospects and the draft. You know, you're always welcome. Maybe we can do an all gambling themed podcast before the season.
Beautiful.
When it will hopefully start.
Yes.
Getting the listeners ready to make some money. Like always, take care of yourself in those times. We wish you and your family all the best. And we'll keep in touch.
Thank you, guys. The feeling is mutual. Thank you for having me back on. And yeah, always a pleasure. And best to you and best to all your listeners.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.